Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soul Seekers podcast, where we believe that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure as we share our mission of mentorship is conservation. To learn more about everything we do, check out our show on Carbon TV or go to soulseekersnation.com. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. This podcast is also proudly brought to you by Onyx Hunt. When I first got into hunting, I kept hearing all about public land and different access and how to find different locations to hunt. I was like, well, how are people even identifying all this stuff? Well, sure enough, I came across the number one hunting GPS app, and that is Onyx Hunt. If you guys want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx Hunt is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. It was a game changer for me, and I know it's going to be a game changer for you if you've never used it. If you have used it, you know the power that it holds. Guys, I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt and check out their app. Be blessed, freedom on, and stay soulful. All right, guys, if you're in the market for a new hunting rifle this coming year, look no further than a Kelbley's rifle. I've been rocking their Coda rifle for the last couple seasons and have had great success with it. It's an amazing shooter, and every time I put one of their rifles in somebody's hands, they're like, oh, I gotta get one of these. Kelbley's holds over 92 world and national records that are either broken or set on one of their actions or rifles. So they really set a higher level of accuracy. If you want to know more about Kelbley's rifles, go to Kelbley.com. That's K-E-L-B-L-Y.com. Tell them Johnny Mac sent you with Soul Seekers. And go enjoy shooting that much more in this coming hunting season. Be blessed, everybody. Go check out Kelbley Rifles. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soul Seekers podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mac. And tonight, I am joined by the better half of hunting, my beautiful and amazing wife of 10 years, Mrs. Megan Mack. How you doing, babe?
Good, thank you. Better half of hunting, not so sure about that, but glad to be here.
Oh, you're always a better half. All right, guys, so what I wanted to do with this episode, and we're starting off 2024 with the foundations of what Soul Seekers is. We've gone over a fitness episode, we've gone over a mentorship episode. This episode is talking about the foundation of what you want out of hunting, what you want for your family, what do you want for the future. And so we're going to talk, and I wanted to bring my wife on to share her perspective and her viewpoints of what she has seen in her husband. Mm-hmm. Babe, don't hold back, babe. You can talk openly. What she has seen from her husband over the last couple of years of me getting into hunting, and then also the starting of the kids getting into hunting. Mm. Because as I've progressed, that means that the children are getting older, and we've gone from having babies to having young boys. And
crazy.
That's quite an experience. So, first off, what's it like being a hunter's wife? The wife of a hunter?
It is satisfying and lonely at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, not at the same time. Different times. You know what I'm saying?
Well, why don't you break that down for us a little bit more?
The satisfying part is when you bring the meat home and we get to eat it together. And you know, I know exactly where it's from. I'm on a journey of finding more things to put into my body that are clean, and just on a health journey of my own. And it ebbs and flows, and it's becoming more of the center of my life now. So being able to eat meat that I know exactly where it came from and it's not in a grocery store wrapped in plastic is satisfying to me.
Yeah.
And when you're gone, it's hard.
It's hard.
It's a lot easier than when we had babies, but it's not like having you gone.
Yeah.
But
I get that.
You know
what's interesting? I ran across an article, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, about there's a company in Europe that is 3D printing meat.
Ew.
3D printing lab grown meat.
Well, it's not real meat.
No, it's not real meat, but they are using computer-aided drafting drawings and designing to have the texture, the feel, the consistency of whatever type of meat that you want. So they are taking stem cells and mixing it with
Interesting.
a bunch of nutrients or whatever it is to then multiply and grow to feed it into
They're
this.
cloning meat.
They're pretty much cloning meat
Oh
and
my.
printing it, and they're actually making it into like steaks. They said steak, fish, pork, poultry. They can do any of that. And I was just grossed out. I was so thankful that I
I
get to
mean,
hunt and get real food.
that freaks me out. I don't have the information right in front of me, but I know when they cloned that sheep,
Dolly.
Dolly, she didn't live that long.
Right.
She did not live that long. So that's like disturbing to be
Right.
putting that into your body.
And they say, what? You are what you eat?
Well, as a nurse, I can tell you, I, yes, that is true. I see that every day.
Yeah. Oh, man. So you saying the satisfying part of me being a hunter is bringing meat home. You
Hell yeah.
love eating that wild game.
I do. Well, I mean, it tastes good, but I also love the idea that I know exactly where it came from. And you're the only person so far in the last, what, two or three that you've killed?
Yeah.
You're the only person that's touched it.
Yeah, that was kind of a wild realization that I had when I killed my buck in November and no one was with me. So that means no one else touched it. And I gutted it, field dressed it, broke it down, packaged it up, froze it, cooked it for us.
Right.
And I told you that I am the only
Only
person
person, yeah.
that actually touched that meat before it went, to our lips, to our
That's
mouths.
crazy.
That's quite a, I feel like, an accomplishment.
For sure.
Not only for myself, but I feel like for any hunter at that point, like if you can break it down to the pureness of that, like, oh, I am man.
But it's also very satisfying. I mean, gosh. It's a lot of work that you put into that animal, and to like be able to sit down and then pray over the meal and eat it is very satisfying.
Yeah, totally. One of the questions that I have for you is, when I got into hunting, we lived in the state of Washington. I was a Western big game hunter, meaning it was deer season. I'd go for deer, maybe one trip. Maybe,
Right.
it was elk season. I'd go for a trip.
Right.
Bear season. I'd go for a trip, and it was really like methodically,
Right.
season by season. And we moved to Texas, and
Praise the Lord.
deer season, yeah, right. Amen to that. Deer season is a lot different down here because I can shoot four deer, and it goes by archery to rifle, but then you get to shoot and hunt for that amount of time.
Right.
So I'm gone a whole lot more, it seemed like, or maybe I am. What do you think about that? Because it's more like, hey, I'm going to run out to the lease for a couple hours.
Right. So the concept of the lease was obviously new. Well, it was new to me. I don't, you probably knew about it, but didn't experience it till we moved down here. So getting the lease 35, 45 minutes away from our house and having you be like, oh, hey, at three, it's 3 p.m. I'm gonna go hit the lease for an evening hunt and know that you're gonna be back whether you get something or not generally by like 9 or 10 instead of having you gone for 6 or 7 days in a row. That's pretty awesome.
Do you like that more as a
Yeah.
wife?
Yeah.
You like the
I
whole.
mean, either way, I think it's different. It's apples and oranges because if we were in Washington now with our kids the age that they are now, it may have been a different story for you to be gone for a week. But I'm also have a different job and I'm not on the same schedule as the kids. So, I mean, it is different, but knowing that you're going to be coming home every night is nice rather than you being gone 7 or 10 days on a hunt where you may or may not get something. where if you go, even if you were to go 2 or 3 times a week to the lease, whether you get something or not, you're still home and we get to spend time together, which is really important to me. I don't know. It's just a different concept, but it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
To have you.
I totally understand the apples and oranges because, like, for me, I'm also like, oh, I want to go to the mountains. I want to go break a sweat and work hard to find those animals and to, like, you know, look where I'm at. I'm in the wilderness and nothing but God and nature and the connection in that regard. I get the connection when I'm out on the lease.
Right.
But knowing that I have cell service or...
Like you're not completely disconnected and out away from everything.
Right.
I'm sure that's difficult for you.
It's interesting. However, as hard, difficult as it was to shoot a deer this year, it was very satisfying when I finally did.
Yeah. Well, you had to chase that thing a little bit, yeah?
Yeah.
You said over the river and through the woods, and it was right at Christmas time, and that was very fitting. Because it was literally over the river and through the woods.
Yeah, to grandma's house we go. So we have 3 boys. Our oldest just turned 9. He got to go on his very first hunt last year, and he shot his very first deer. As a mom, as a mother to your children, seeing those little babies grow up and then to step into those roles with your husband, what is that like for you? What perspective can you bring to this?
I love it. I think it is the sweetest thing when they're playing outside with the neighbor boys or just them together and they're always hunting something. I mean, they're, you know, they still kind of dabble in, you know, football or dribbling the basketball or whatever, but they're really not into sports. And I think it's because you are not in, not that you're not into them, but you're not displaying your interest the way that you're displaying your interest with hunting. Mm-hmm. And they get so excited to, you know, pretend shoot a deer. That, you know, they're always practicing. They're always modeling after you. Or they're, you know, they're always showing me that they're watching you. And I think it's adorable, and I love it. And I love the way that you guys have that bond, and they love going out to the lease with you. And it's a big bonding experience for you guys that I think is really special.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
As a mother, to see your children grow, you know, when I got into this, they were babies.
I know.
And it was something that's like, you know, Megan, I want to learn how to hunt. I need to know how to do this. I want to be able to pass this on to our children. And we're getting to that point where it is starting to be passed on.
Crazy.
And, you know, pretty soon it won't just be, hey, babe, I'm running out to the lease. It's, hey, I'm going to be taking the kids out to the lease. Or
insane.
Do you want to join us out at the lease? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, have you started to think about that at all?
Oh, yeah, it's way more of a possibility now than I feel like it was, at least in my head, even before we moved here.
Yeah.
You know, our youngest is going to be 5 in July. And I feel like, in my head, when we started having kids, I was like, okay, well, when our youngest is 5, ... fill in the blank. But that was like, that was reaching the point where you knew that you were going to have a little bit more free time. Or at least I did.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, when he's 5, maybe we can go, you know, to Disneyland, or when he's 5, we'll be able to sleep in a little bit more. Or it was just like, that's kind of like the thing in my head.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think going out, having us as a family go out to the lease together and being able to experience that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. What do you think about hunting in general, as far as for you? I've always asked you, like, hey, come do it with me. Come do it with me. Yeah. And your response is always like, that's more your thing. But having children that are actively involved in that,
I am more open to it now than I've ever been to at least go and experience it with you guys, because we can all do it as a family now. It wasn't something that I ever wanted to, like, quote unquote, waste a babysitter on, because we're so limited with childcare.
Yeah.
And always, and really kind of always have been. I didn't want to take a date night or whatever you want to call it. I didn't want to pay a babysitter to go hunting with you. Like, there was a bazillion other things on my list that I would rather do. But now I feel like things have evened out. I would totally be down.
Yeah.
Just bring some snacks.
Lots of snacks.
Sit in the blind and see what we can find. And maybe mama can pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Totally.
We need to go shooting more as a family. That's something that in 2024, I want to make sure everyone gets more trigger time.
Yeah. We need more time for everything.
Right.
There's not enough time. Whoever came up with 24 hours in a day was just not on point. it's not good. We need more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we both work full time and we're doing the best we can.
What do you want for your children? I can tell the listeners that the kind of my view of what I want for our boys, but as a mother, what do you want for them?
I want them to grow up to be strong and independent and loving and kind. I want them to have a skill that they can pass on to their children, but also use that skill to be able to take care of their families.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them to all be amazing husbands and fathers, just like you. And be,
thank you.
And I'm not just saying that, but I want them to have a skill, a lifelong skill, a skill that they can use for their whole life, that they can pass down. And I mean, obviously this is it. I know a lot of people love sports, and you know, if our kids ever start to show interest in that, then I'm sure we'll get them into something. But that only lasts a short amount of time, in my opinion. You know, you kind of age out of that at some point, whereas hunting you can do for a really, really, really long time, and you can support yourself and your family. And I think it's an amazing skill that everybody should have.
Living in the state of Washington, hunting was not very well promoted, nor friendly, like optimistically looked upon.
Mm-hmm.
There was more anti-hunters and non-hunters than there were hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Moving to Texas, is talking about hunting more common? Do you hear people, like, you're a professional,
I'm a nurse.
Yeah.
And I have a very small office. There's four or five of us. There's five of us in the office. Five of us nurses that work in the office. And there is one other lady in the office who, none of them are opposed to it, by the way, but there's one other lady in the office who shows me her game camera every single day. Miss Cindy.
Really?
Oh my gosh, she's amazing. She has a ton of acreage down in Mineral Wells, which is
west
of us. And she has like 10 acres or something, just a ton of land. And she shows me her game cameras every single day of all these bucks and this huge, huge hog she has on her property right now. And raccoons. And I mean, all these things. And makes me giggle because she doesn't hunt, but she loves looking at the animals. And like, her son-in-law hunts and her boyfriend hunts, and there's people in her family that hunt that obviously that's why they have the game camera. But she gets so excited to show me all these things. And then there's another lady who also has a lot of land, and she's constantly talking about all the deer on her land and needing to thin it out a little bit. But her mom, who actually owns the property, doesn't doesn't want to allow it right now. But I mean, it's everybody talks about it. All my patients I see, you know, they're all, we live in a small community. I work at a very small hospital, and I'm constantly seeing these old timers that, you know, that's what they do. They hunt, they ranch, they take care of their family, they wear their cowboy hats in, they got mud on their boots when they show up in my office. I mean, it's like hardcore. I love it.
It's a, what I've really come to love about hunting is that it's a way of life.
Oh,
it's,
totally.
It's not just a hobby or pastime.
You know, that's how people get their food.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, my hairdresser went to get a haircut, and she was talking to another hairdresser mm-hmm. while cutting my hair
yeah.
about hunting deer, and oh, yeah. all they eat is venison.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a conversation that would never have happened in Washington.
No, never. Never.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm like, okay, it's really fun being surrounded. I mean, birds of a feather flock together concept. It's fun to be in a community of people that view it in such a beneficial manner. What I'm fascinated by is the bubble mentality of like, it's not bothering us or nothing's wrong here, so hunting probably is just fine everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's not like that. Hunting's actually under attack. I was talking with our good buddy Sam, Sam Singleton, who's been on the podcast before, and he, I had him as a guest with Andrew McKeon, the yeah. former editor-in-chief of Outdoor Life magazine mm-hmm. and all that. And after that podcast, he said, I didn't realize hunting was under attack that much, or that it's oh. being like stripped away from people.
Well, yeah, but Sam's from Texas.
Correct.
And he has no reason to know otherwise. So, you know, that's neither here nor there, but whatever. But, well, I think that's why it was so important to have such a close-knit community when we were in Washington, because you're really swimming against the current constantly up there. But there's a big community of people that are, I think, are fighting or at least want to fight and love to hunt. It's just exhausting.
Yeah. Since the last time that you were on the podcast, probably like
a long time ago, when we were in Snohomish.
Yeah, it's been couch. A while. So you guys want to listen to one of those first episodes with my beautiful wife, you can. Since that point, she has gone on a journey of understanding where her food comes from, along with me.
Mm-hmm.
And you had an opportunity to do what?
Oh, butcher the chickens?
Yeah. You butchered chickens.
Six.
You
I cut their heads off.
You cut their heads off. You cut their heads off.
I did.
You butchered them, and then you got to enjoy the fruits
and
of
then
your
we
labor.
We ate it, and it was amazing.
What was that process like for you? Because I think that is probably one of the only things that I can draw a parallel to hunting.
Sure.
For you.
Sure. I knew from when we decided that we were going to let Will and Kelsey, our friends, not let them, that they were going to let us have, basically they were going to raise six of our chickens that we were going to yeah. eventually butcher. And bless them for that, and thank you. I started to prepare mentally, like literally from that point. Because the boys wanted to name their chickens, and they wanted to, like, I was like, we're not naming these chickens because we're gonna eat them. I was scared, and then the butcher day, I was very, very nervous. But I knew that if I didn't just do it, that I wouldn't do it, which is kind of how I do everything in my life. I feel like I've done a lot of things in my life that scare me, and I just do it without thinking. I can't think any more about it. I just do it. And that's what I did with the chickens. And I don't think that I would ever get used to butchering an animal. I don't think it will ever not affect me. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I knew why I was doing it. And I knew that if I didn't do it, I wouldn't know that I could do it. And right. in the event that I needed to do it, I wanted to know that I could do it.
Right.
So.
What was it like taking the life of an animal?
It was hard for me. It was hard, but also I knew why I was doing it, and I knew that those animals were raised to be food, and I prayed over all of them before I butchered them, and of course we pray before we eat, and I knew that I wasn't doing something wrong. It just was hard.
Yeah.
It's hard on my heart. I'm a nurse. I'm not supposed to hurt things. I'm supposed to make them feel better.
So, I'm a deep thinker. I don't know if you know this about me.
Oh, weird.
I'm constantly chewing through thoughts in my mind and looking at them from as many different angles as possible. Being raised in a Western Christian society, you know, in the Bible it talks about, animals are for mankind.
Sure.
And we're meant to take care of them. And then I look towards Eastern religion and the yin and yang,
sure.
the duality of life. Through death brings life. Mm-hmm. In life we die, but then that spawns on new life and that circle. And so I'm always like constantly like, all right, are these animals, like, I try to put myself in like what it would be like to be a vegan. Not because I want to be a vegan.
I would just pass out every day.
But because, right? But because I want to, be able to speak to it. And so, people, a lot of anti-hunters are like, animals are not food. Animals are our friends, and mm-hmm. all this. And I understand that. And everything dies.
Well, I also think that if you're And listen, I have not read the entire Bible. I wasn't raised in a home where that was asked of me. So I'm not trying to sound like I know better. But I believe that in the Bible, like you said, the animals are here for humans. So if that's the case, then aren't they our food source? And also, if you're a vegan, you're still killing something
right.
to eat. So, and I don't know the whole of it, and I don't really care what anybody does. I just don't want anything pushed on me. So if you're a vegan, cool, do you. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't – I personally don't think I could do it. Just like I personally don't think I could do the carnivore diet. I don't think it's right for me. You know what I'm saying? Like just all meat all the time. I don't know. I like a little bit of a variety. But you're doing it, and you're having no problem, so I don't know.
Right.
But
it's interesting. One of the things, so going back to this, like, animals,
mm-hmm.
are they our friends? Are they just an object? Do they have souls? Are they, if our dog Hickory never knew us
right.
and never loved us the way he does, if he was just out in the wild, would he still be able to connect to humans the way he does?
I don't know. Are they? I don't know. Is he bred? Is he bred to be a pet, or is he bred to be wild? I don't know. I don't. Has anybody ever bred an elk to be a pet? Down like four generations to like be a pet? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
But isn't that a good question?
Yeah.
Like, if you just take a wild elk. And then you breed it for four, five, six generations, and you have each generation try to be your pet. Like, will you finally eventually get that elk to be like a house pet? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Has anybody ever tried that before?
I don't know. I'll have to look into that.
But I mean, that would kind of be like, that would kind of answer the question.
Yeah.
I don't want an elk in my house, though. So.
No, but you could ride one. There are pictures of people like riding elk like horses, Santa Claus. Like rolling into town on an elk. It's super awesome. That's BA.
Yeah.
So with that being said,
excuse me.
Trying to view it like through a vegan's eyes, killing an animal, taking it, eating it. These animals are just out there, you know. I want to make sure I get my words right. What I am doing. Mm. I just caught myself. I'm mm-hmm. applying human emotion mm-hmm. to animals. Mm-hmm.
They're not human.
They're not human.
Right.
This dog obviously loves us.
Oh, he's amazing.
And is like attached to us and like wants to, you know. Dogs are, they're always.
But they're domesticated.
Sad when you leave and happy when you show up.
Yeah.
I would love the deer to be like that. Like, oh, the hunter's gone. Oh, good, he's back here.
That make your life very easy.
Right. That's the concept I always.
They're not domesticated animals.
Right.
That's the difference, and that's what my question was: is can you domesticate those animals and replicate the domestication of a dog or a cat or like any other common domesticated pet?
You remember watching the lion, not lion, Tiger King with Joe Exotic? Gosh.
Do I remember 2020? Woo-woo.
So those tigers weren't like brought from the wild into.
No, they were like, I don't know, quote unquote domesticated.
Right. But they were still like,
well, what was
rip
that?
Your head off.
Duh. What was that one show in Vegas? Were those two
the
dudes?
Two white lions, Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, and the guy got absolutely mauled, and I think eventually died from those injuries.
Now it's just Siegfried, or now it's
one
just
of
Roy?
Them. Yeah. I don't know. Those were quote unquote domesticated tigers. Tigers? Were they
yeah,
tigers? They were white
tigers.
Tigers.
Yep.
So I mean, I think the wild is bred out of them after years and years and years and years of breeding. Like you breed for the genetic makeup that you want.
Uh-huh.
So like, I don't know, maybe a dog like Hickory, well, he's a doodle, so he's goofy, but there ain't a bone in his body that wants to hurt anything. But I'm just saying, like, animals in the wild, when you kill them, they're not domesticated. They're not, I don't know. Do they have feelings? They get hungry and they want to have sex.
Right.
That's it. That's it. You know.
And don't die.
And to survive, so their genes live on. So I don't know. I don't know what vegans believe. I've never really gone down that.
We had a former vegan in our house this last weekend.
Who are you? What are you talking? Oh, well, I think that was just something she was trying. I don't think she was like hardcore. Like I would try being a vegan, I guess, if somebody wanted me to.
Why?
I'm kind of willing to try anything.
Except carnivore?
I would try carnivore. I didn't say I wouldn't try it. I said, I don't think I said I wouldn't try it. If I did, I meant that I don't think that it would be, I don't think it would work for me, or I don't think I would be satisfied on it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's right for my body.
It's fascinating to be on a diet right now of all animal byproduct, right. Animal product byproduct.
Yeah.
Is incredible.
Yeah.
To think that solely animals can provide the life that we need.
But that, yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. God like, put them on the earth for a reason.
Like, I don't need bread. I don't need to bake bread.
Mm-mm.
I don't need to
well, what did the,
eat lettuce.
What did the cavemen eat. They ate whatever they could, you know, whatever plant or berry they could scavenge, and they ate meat when they could get it.
Right.
And they probably ate once every 2 weeks. Meat.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said about that kind of a diet. Kind of brings you back to your roots, but we were also moving a lot more back then. You were constantly on the move. You were constantly on the hunt. You were constantly using your body. Whereas now, even me, who's very much aware that I want to be moving my body all day, and I sit down all day long at a desk. And it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
So the way that we're supposed to be and meant to be, I don't know what that really means. Other than our bodies are meant to move. We're meant to eat.
So just like breeding meat. The wild out of dogs, mm-hmm. per se, or knowing that the wild is still within these animals, what wild is still within you? Like, what are the things that you're like, I need to do this?
I need to move my body every single day. Period. There's no negotiation around that. You know that. The kids know that. And I try not to have it interrupt the daily life or take away from time with them. But, yeah, I have to move my body.
Yeah.
After sitting all day at work, for sure. And I enjoy eating healthy and I enjoy feeling healthy. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy eating the meat that you bring home, is because I know without a doubt that this is the best meat that I could ever put into my body.
Yeah. It is the best. Those back straps we made the other night.
So good.
Man, incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you want to move. You're not meant to be stagnant. Mm-mm. You're meant to be active in pursuit of something.
Mm-hmm. But also eating that kind of food, eating the meat that is wild game and moving my body, it makes me want to move my body rather than if you're intaking junk constantly that just crashes you and makes you want to sit on the couch.
Yeah. It's very fascinating.
I do like junk food, though, sometimes.
Yeah, right. Okay, I'm gonna read you six things. And I'm going to ask you about them. So Soul Seekers has six brand pillars.
Okay.
When I started hunting and starting to build this brand, originally Washington Backcountry, Soulful Hunter Podcast, now Soul Seekers, my goal was to set off to A, learn how to hunt, B, build a community, get into a tribe of people that we could lean upon. So I have six brand pillars that I came up with. And I think it's really cool because it's impacted me. All six have impacted me, but they've also impacted you. And I'm going to help you think about this if you can't think of something right off the top of the head.
Okay.
So the very first one is mentorship. I've had the opportunity to mentor hunters, but I've also been mentored by a lot of other people that I've come into contact with specifically because of hunting. And hunting, the community of the hunting world that provided that mentorship opened up doors to other mentorship beyond just hunting. Can you call upon anything that you have been a part of in regards to mentorship since Soul Seekers starting?
Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, it doesn't have anything to do specifically with actually hunting, because I have never had the opportunity. I've had the opportunity. I've never taken you up on the opportunity because of life. But the preserving side of everything has been huge for me.
Yes.
The...
You just made bone broth tonight.
Yeah, I just did. I made bone broth with, so we bought a cow from a local ranch here Christian ranch where like they play classical music for the cows before they butcher them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And everything is, that's what she said when, that's actually the the huge reason why I wanted to go with them.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Because, and they treat all of their, they just treat their animals very well. And, so yeah, Johnny is on this carnivore diet and he has been struggling with his electrolyte balance, irritability and fatigue and just like no energy. And I did a little bit of research and bone broth apparently is like the answer. So I threw some bones in the crock pot last night. Normally I would put them on the stove, but it was so late. Threw them in the crock pot and then you got to have some today when you got home from work and you said it made you feel better.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
But just the preserving and the being able to like cook stuff like that and expanding my knowledge on how to prepare my own food without having to go to the store and buy something that's like a boxed bone broth or how to can my own turkey soup from Thanksgiving or just how to like prepare and preserve what we are acquiring.
Yeah.
Has been big for me. And it's actually, I really love it. And I can see it becoming more of a hobby for me now that I have more time.
So that is all a byproduct of your husband becoming a hunter.
Right.
That's beautiful. I love that. So these are some of the things that I want all you listeners to walk away with from this podcast is understanding that the tangible benefits of hunting and becoming a hunter and speaking positively about hunting and promoting it doesn't just stop with you.
Yeah.
It goes beyond just you. So here's my wife talking about the benefits for her in her life. Okay, the second one, kind of easy. I mentioned it slightly already, but community.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've found so many friends in just in Texas in the almost 2 years that we've been here, who are in the hunting community. Obviously, most people hunt here. It's kind of the way of the way of life here. But having that community where we can openly talk about it, we share stories and families share their lives together because of hunting, I think that's amazing.
Yeah. We had, before I get to that story, Sam Singleton took him on the spring bear hunt. It'll be airing this spring on Carbon TV. Mm-hmm. I was sitting out in the car with our three boys. You ran into the Family Dollar. You ended up talking with him.
Like somehow just randomly, because we were in line together.
Somehow it started about talking about bears. Yeah. And all of a sudden, now our families are great friends with them. And they helped us get on a lease.
Right.
And all this, all because of hunting.
Right.
Then created community.
Right.
And they were like our first friends in Texas.
They were our first friends in Texas. And it's weird that I was the one that actually...
You started it.
I started it, which is, I'm not usually one to like just talk to random people. We were at the Family Dollar getting bread and there was a thunderstorm and it thundered really loud and I kind of jumped and I turned around to see if anybody saw me and there Sam was and I said, "I'm sorry, I'm not from here." And he goes, "I can tell." And then he asked where I was from and I said Washington and that's when the bear story came out. So,
but isn't that amazing?
Yes.
How hunting brought community for us.
That's exactly what it was.
Love it. Okay, here's one for you because I know how hunting helps me with my own self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
How does being married to a hunter or going through the process or observing it help you with self-discovery?
That's a really hard question because I'm not a deep thinker like you are. I can say that I know what I'm capable of when you're gone and what I can do by myself.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm pretty independent and of course things have gotten easier as I've already said, but it's helped me to understand what my capabilities are.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
You've learned how to be a stronger human being through being a part of the hunting community.
Being your partner, yeah.
Yeah. How about this one? You mentioned it earlier. I'm going to bring it back. Killing the chickens.
Yeah, I feel like that is something that if I did it more often, that it would become easier for me because it was and still is right now because I've only done it that one time. Hard for me. I did it, and I'm still very proud of myself for doing it, and I know that I can do it if I need to do it, but there's a big part of me that really wants to raise chickens for meat and, you know, have my own little garden and do all those things that who knows if I'm ever going to have time for if I'm working full time. But I feel like if we were to decide tomorrow, like, okay, we're going to get meat chickens, butcher Dane came, I'd be fine. Yeah. I know I can do it.
Yeah.
And I was very, very proud of myself and still am very proud of myself for being able to do it.
Farm to table, field to table, yeah. Whatever that is, you're yeah. part of it now.
Yeah.
So the self-discovery of like, hey, I can do this.
Right. Well, it's a big accomplishment. I mean, besides birthing three children and raising them, that's one of my biggest accomplishments. I know that might sound really little to somebody, but I butchered six chickens and I was terrified to do it.
Right.
And I did it anyways.
Yeah.
And you got some really badass pictures of it too.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Next one. This is, I know you can answer this. I'm kind of already thinking of answers for you on this one. Natural connections. So how have you, since being married to a hunter or being within the hunting community, dove deeper into understanding you connecting with nature? Because there is. You're talking about it with the chickens.
Right.
You find yourself wanting to be outdoors more.
Oh, I want to.
You're seeing, you know,
yeah,
you want to garden more and actually be more self-sustaining. So
I wasn't sure what you were asking, but yeah, yes.
Well, let me read you what Soul Seekers, what we talk about when it comes to natural connections. Society breeds a high level of insulation from the natural world, which creates a disconnect and a lack of knowledge of the healing powers of nature.
Mm-hmm.
We know that everything stems from our Creator and anything that we need can be found within the organic world. In order to improve our connectivity with nature, heal ourselves, and deepen our knowledge and understanding, an open mind is required to engage with the natural world.
Mm.
Do you find yourself being more open-minded now towards new ideas and concepts since going down this journey of providing your own food and organic and all of a sudden more health conscious or
I do. I'm just much more aware of what I put into my body, and I'm much more aware of like when I'm not connecting with the earth and I haven't for whatever reason, like needing to get outside, needing to take my shoes off, needing to sit on the grass with my bare feet, needing to just connect with the outside.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm just more aware in general, I guess.
I love that.
From all of this.
I totally agree with you. All right. The next one. This is interesting. Okay. I don't know how you're going to answer this. The fifth pillar for Soul Seekers is conservation.
Mm-hmm.
Conserving for the next generation. How has conservation impacted you? Or how do you view conservation?
Well, I mean, obviously our three boys are obsessed with
beautiful
hunting.
Answer. Yeah.
And everything that you're all about right now, and which I love. So you have three soon-to-be men that you're raising that you're teaching to hunt. You're teaching to pretty much be self-sufficient on a level. Like, maybe not completely, but, yeah, you're teaching them to be able to find their own food. Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's amazing. And they're excited about it.
Right.
So them being excited about it means that they're going to learn more, they're going to absorb more, and they're going to want to pass it on, hopefully,
yeah,
when they have their children.
Yep, yep. Conservation, baby. To conserve for future generations is mm-hmm. important. Okay, here's one you're going to have a difficult time with. Hopefully you can come up with an answer because I'm not sure about this one for you. Primal adventure. I'm going to read the definition for soul seekers.
Okay.
Society is constantly influencing us to settle into a life of mundane boredom where we waste our lives away waiting for a concept of retirement or for the next entertaining moment to capture our attention. As soul seekers, we believe that life is now and it is meant to be experienced rather than observed. By living an adventurous life, perspectives are established, ushering us towards a life of wisdom, understanding, and fulfillment.
So, I don't think this is a hard thing for me to understand or come up with. I think that what's difficult is the societal pressures and cost of living in general. Because if, like, obviously we could sell everything and go live in our trailer and live the exact life that we want to live. Well, what's holding us back? Well, one of my biggest dreams is I want to travel. And you can't really travel a lot. Like, I'm talking outside the United States. You can't really travel if you don't have money. And you don't have money unless you're working. So primal adventure for me is, I feel, for us and how we conceptualize that in our life and mine in general, is one step at a time, a little piece here and there. You know, we take adventures with the boys. We'll take them out and we go camping and we plan little things for us to do together. You take them out and take them to the lease, and we're planning on doing a family thing to the lease. And even the preserving part really is a little bit of a primal adventure for me because I'm still learning.
Yeah.
But yeah, we also have responsibilities, so it's kind of hard to just.
Anytime you're dealing with food, it feels like it returns you back to the root of humanity.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do I survive?
I'm making my own food, yeah.
If you're making your own
food. Preserving and making my own stuff. I get a lot of fulfillment and joy out of giving it to other people as well.
Bingo.
And I know Kelsey, who's the one that taught me all of this and introduced us to the freeze dryer, like, that was her love language, was giving her food away to people. Instead of payment, she would, or as a thank you or a gift, yeah, an offering of, like, love. She would give that to people, and it really touched my heart very, very deeply.
Yeah.
And now I actually feel the same way. Like, I love preserving stuff and giving it to people. Like, when we gave our neighbors, Carrie and Daryl, that chicken soup that I made from Thanksgiving or Christmas, and they loved it, and it made me so happy to be able to, like, give them something that they really enjoyed.
Yep.
I don't know. That's
being
my
able
answer.
To feed yourself and also feed other people mm-hmm. is probably one of the greatest things ever.
But feed them like this healthy, nutrient dense, delicious food.
You know, a lot of people don't realize this, but what you're doing is you're providing life for somebody else.
Yeah.
You're giving them life.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I love it. Totally blown away. What do you see for the future of this family and hunting adventures?
I mean, I think that we're just going to keep having more fun. I think the adventures are going to get bigger. I think our opportunities are going to get greater. And we're going to gosh, I'd really love to take the boys back to our property in Montana and just have a big old family road trip like we used to do, and
yep.
do a hunting trip and make it kind of a hunting, fishing trip where we get what we can and bring it back and preserve it and get to share it with people.
That would
be like, hey, this is from Montana, from our property.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be epic.
Oh, I think the boys are just going to become more and more interested and learn more and more. And this is going to be their thing. Like, some kids and some families are all about sports, or they're all about, I don't know, other things. And this is going to be our thing. Yeah. This is our thing.
What advice or words of wisdom or encouragement do you have for the wives out there of hunters, or the spouses or the significant others?
So, I mean, I feel like I've been through it with you. We've been through it together. And it was, I think it was a hard, tough, like, beginning for us, because you were not a hunter when we got married. And as soon as we started having kids, you were like, okay, hey, I want to take off. And I think everybody just needs to be patient with each other. And I think realizing that having a child, like a brand new baby, is very difficult for the mama, can be for the dad too. Just be patient and know that there's a time and a season for everything. And I know that I said that to you a lot when we had babies. It wasn't a no. It was just a please, not right now. And now's your time. And maybe it didn't feel like this for you, but for me, it went by in a blink of an eye, where we had three babies and now we have three school-age kids where they let me sleep in. And they're kind of self-sufficient. Not all the way, but, you know, they're kind of. And it's so different. So my advice for both parties is just be patient with one another. If you got babies, and be supportive and try to find a way to enjoy it together, because there's literally nothing better than enjoying that food together, enjoying that meat, and really enjoying the family time surrounding it, mm-hmm. and all the things that you can learn while you're doing it together.
I love it. Anything else you want to sign off with before we go?
I love you.
Oh, I appreciate it. I love you too. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you got anything out of it, just know that this life is happening for you. It's not happening to you. You get to create the life that you want, which means if you're creating that life with a spouse, be in community, and be in strong conversation with them. No, no doesn't mean never. It just means
correct. Not right now.
No doesn't mean never. It means not right now. And that's something that can be very difficult for us to hear, learn, and truly understand.
And respect. Really and truly.
Yeah, love that. All right, guys, be blessed. If you like this episode, share, subscribe, like, all that. Everything helps the channel, helps the mission. If you guys want to support us, you can go swing by our online store, soulseekersnation.com, and pick up some swag merchandise. I'll see you out there. Let us know how this has helped you. Be blessed. Freedom on. And as always, stay soulful.
If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to support the show, you can always like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating, as it helps us share our mission of mentorship is conservation. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of Soul Seekers Nation as we transform lives through primal adventure. If you want to get more connected with the podcast, check out the Soul Seekers Nation Facebook group, as I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. So stay tuned and stay soulful.